Hello, welcome to another edition of the Sports Bro Podcast. I am your host, Tom Bassam. I'm always lucky when I'm joined by my esteemed editorial colleagues, but I'm especially lucky this week because I am joined by Sports Bro's technology editor and, for the purposes of this podcast anyway, passionate golf fan, Steve McCaskill. Steve, welcome to the show.
No, thank you for having me. Always happy to talk about golf, even though I have no skill as a player.
Oh, I play a lot and I have no skill as a player either, so I don't think you're alone there. I think that's maybe the unifying thing about golf is the fact that everyone, apart from these very small handful of people, is actually quite bad.
My house backs onto a golf course and I live near a massive driving range, and I'm allowed in the driving range, but there's no way I'm allowed on the golf course.
I would pay to see it. Then maybe pay to leave. The reason we're talking about golf is because this week, obviously, is everyone's favourite major, or at least my favourite major, the Masters, the Disneyland for adults, as a TV experience. Now, we've done podcasts on the Masters before, and I think quite a lot of that ground on its unique appeal and heritage and all of that stuff is pretty well covered, and I think you could probably read that in a few bits we published on the site this week. But as ever, and I feel like we've said this a lot when talking about golf in the last couple of years, it's a very, very interesting time. Steve, I mean, I guess let's kick things off. Can I just get your thoughts on where the game is at the moment going into the first major of the season?
It's the same as last year's Masters, wasn't it? It was the first real moment where we're going to see LIV and then PGA Tour players compete on the same stage. And I have to confess, this time last year, I thought we'd have a bit more clarity on the situation. If anything, it's a bit more uncertain given the bombshell merger announcement, the lack of movement on that, deadlines extended. But the reality is that we have two tours at the minute and the players are dispersed between them. I know that there's confidence that a deal is going to reach soon, but there's obviously regulatory issues, there's geopolitical elements to it. And I don't know if we're any closer to seeing what the future of golf is going to be like than we were last year.
Yeah, it's a really strange holding pattern that I think golf is in right now, where a big name picks off and leaves every kind of 6 months or so. Lots of gushing around like, oh, is this the end of the PGA Tour? And the PGA Tour carries on regardless. LIV Golf gets another high-profile player. And we've just been in this spin cycle for a little while. I guess the thing that's unique and the first time this has happened is that this will be the first time the returning Masters Championship will be a player from the LIV Tour in Jon Rahm. He was the last player to be picked off and taken over.
Of course, LIV have made some very high-profile signings. They signed the defending Open champion in Cam Smith. Jon Rahm is on a different level, I think, to any other player that LIV has managed to secure, both in terms of his status, the fact he is the defending Masters champion, he's coming back to Augusta to try and win that title again. But the difference between other LIV signings, even the big-name ones, is this happened during a period where the PGA and LIV were supposed to be merging. They're supposed to be coming one tour, yet there's still these contract negotiations, these transfers, so to speak, happening. So that's why Jon Rahm is just, it's a different situation to what we've had before. And as you say, the player hosting the Champions Dinner is on LIV, and it's just another layer of intrigue to what is becoming a very complicated situation. Whether it's fast moving anymore, I don't really know, because it's going through the courts and going through negotiations. So yeah, just again, like I said before, it's a really weird sort of build up to this year.
There seems to be less conflict going into this year's Masters. Last year, there was, if you remember, Greg Norman was talking about how all the LIV players would be around the 18th celebrating if one of their own was to put on the green jacket, as if it was some kind of unfancied thing that's one of the best players in the world of golf. It would be a real triumph for the underdog. I don't feel like that's the narrative going in this year. I feel like tempers on both sides have cooled a little bit. There's not that level of animosity between the two tours that we had last year. And maybe Jon Rahm moving over, people kind of saw that as, this is certainly the way I saw it, is like, okay, this means that inevitably all of these players are going to come back together and play again. Yeah.
I mean, Jon Rahm's always been one of the more pragmatic voices on this debate. He said he was going to stick with the PGA Tour, and he did, but he didn't perhaps have the same rhetoric that perhaps Rory McIlroy used, although McIlroy has distanced himself from that a little bit to an extent. And I think McIlroy's decision to distance himself from his previous comments and Rahm's decision to join LIV both reflect the current state of golf. That they both backed the PGA Tour and then perhaps felt a bit left in the dark by the decision to merge. McIlroy said as much. You know, he feels a bit like he was hung out to dry. As for someone like Jon Rahm, who is you know, close with people like Sergio Garcia, decided, well, if this is the attitude that the PGA Tour are going to take, then why do I not take the money? It's also important to note that Rahm doesn't live in Florida like a lot of rest of the golfers, which also, although we now know he's joining LIV, was one of the reasons he wasn't going to join TGL in January, which is another thing that's happening in the background, that postponed team-based golf tournament that, again, adds to another level of uncertainty. So yes, far less antagonistic, a bit more pragmatism on both sides. And again, I think everyone, all the players, regardless of which side, just want maybe a clear idea of what's going to happen.
No, and I think that's reflected. There was the ESPN story that they've gone out to a LIV event and spoken to a bunch of the players on that side, quotes Phil Mickelson, John Rahm, and also Bryson DeChambeau, all basically saying variations of this kind of needs to come back together. Some of them are saying it's fine to have two tours, but we need to be able to play on both, which is interesting because I don't quite know how they'll reach that position if golf wants to set itself up as, well, if you are a member of those tours and that whether or not you go back to being individual contractor, like that kind of thing, like that relationship is getting quite murky. I mean, it does sound like that's kind of inevitably where this goes. When we get to that point, I feel like the sports washing narrative of this will have succeeded in that we will no longer be talking about, oh, it's immoral that this thing has happened. It's more like, oh, this is just a bit of a relief that we're going to have all of the best players playing each other again on a regular basis.
Yeah, in some ways, it's a bit like when New Coke came out and they returned to Coca-Cola Classic, and there was a stroke of marketing genius that things have gone back to the way they were. And you're right, the sports washing element is not being spoke of that much anymore. And that's, I think that's because there is that desire to have, you know, this one single circuit, have the best players playing against each other as much as possible. And what form that takes, I don't really know. Will we see a more streamlined PGA Tour calendar that includes, of course, the European Tour are involved in these discussions? Will we see a two-tier tour? Maybe we'll see more traditional events with some team-based events that replace the LIV events, and you can still have, this is really bad, like the only name of those teams I can remember is Majestics.
Oh, you're not a big fan of the Range Goats. They're the Aces too, I feel like. I was really showing off my LIV knowledge right now.
It just shows how much, again, you're a very much an engaged golf fan, and you can't recite more than two, which shows you the team-based concept. But yeah, I think everyone wants to get back to that point. I don't think two tours is sustainable, at least not in the unifying framework. I think that's what we want to get back to.
That's definitely the position that big names came down on. Rahm saying in that piece I mentioned on ESPN, basically that he believes there's room for two tours. And I think that we have the opportunity to end up with a better product for spectators and fans of the game. And a little bit more variety doesn't hurt anybody. I think it's going to be, like you said, Steve, that will be a bit of a fugazi, because it would just be like telling us something that we had before is actually better, despite the fact that maybe not a lot has really changed.
I'm going to say one nice thing about LIV, which I haven't always done because I'm not really engaged with it. And I think if you look at the PGA Tour, I think from an outsider, it can be a bit hard to follow in that regard. You know, the tournament names, for example, it's the, I'm butchering a lot of these, but it's, you know, one week it's the Memorial, one week it's the Wells Fargo. I couldn't tell you where these are. And I know golf is quite US focused, whereas at least with LIV, the marketing is a bit simplified. It's LIV London, LIV Australia, or what have you. So there are some ways that two tours can learn from each other, but I think John Rahm would very much like to be able to play PGA Tour events, but perhaps a bit more of a streamlined schedule, or maybe, you know, again, he's being well paid as well. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly don't think, based on the numbers that we're seeing for TV ratings for LIV Golf, I mean, like, they've ticked up a bit this year, but I think they had one event where the final round drew 432,000 viewers in the US on the CW. That's actually really not to be sniffed at all. That's pretty good ratings for golf on TV in the US. But that long term, that's not a viable property. And that's kind of, I think, where this all comes back to and has done ever really since the breakaway happened, is that, like, really golf fans are just going to follow where the majority of the best players are, and it's the easiest to see it. And right now, the PGA Tour still has that in its back pocket. So LIV cannot be viable unless something dramatically changes on the sort of the media front.
No. The CW is, you know, it's a network in US. It's quite widely available, but It's not been traditionally known for its sports coverage. It's doing a lot on that front to try and expand that, but it's not top tier rights. And 400,000 viewers for, you know, the amount of investment is obviously, it's quite clearly not viable. You're looking at something like the recent UFL launch that's got about one and a half million viewers. That's pretty good for an upstart sports league, which will have, you know, a lot less in costs than LIV. And as you say, the PGA Tour, it's got contracts. It's on ESPN Plus. It's got contracts with the major networks. That's where a lot of these sports fans are. That's where a lot of golf fans are. And I think, as you say, until that really changes, it's not going to be able to push the needle in the same way.
To bring this conversation back to the Masters, which is where I always want to be, the thing about this current split is that it does really heighten the attention on these four major events. And with the Masters being the first of the season, and obviously it's kind of standing with golf fans generally, maybe they have a vested interest in actually this kind of split kind of going on for a little bit longer. Being as they are, they become a much bigger, much more important part of the golfing ecosystem.
I think short term, sure, there's going to be some uplift in interest for the reasons you mentioned. Long term, I'm not so sure. I think that the major tournaments, so I was a tentpole events as part of a wider season. If you don't have that season-long narrative with the best players dueling week in, week out, I think over time there is going to be a bit of a drop-off in interest. You know, let's say in a hypothetical world, Rory McIlroy and John Rahm were off the back of several weeks competing, you know, top five finishes against each other, going to perform together. That's a stronger narrative than Rory McIlroy's done well. John Rahm, we're really not so sure. He's not played a lot of golf this year. So I think that novelty would eventually wear off. I think the major tournaments benefit from, yeah, that season-long narrative, the investments in coverage.
But do they, though? I'm not sure that's true because, like you said, only really avid golf fans are watching the tournaments in between, right? And most people just tune in for the majors. So if you know that the majors are going to be the only place that you see where these big stars come in, and we've already seen last year that it doesn't really seem to impact the performance too much of the LIV players. I mean, some are visibly checked out of the game. Like Dustin Johnson looks like he's like not even playing the same sport anymore. But Brooks Koepka is still Brooks Koepka. Brooks Koepka is Brooks Koepka, who never cared about regular tour events when he was on the PGA Tour. So the fact that he just gets paid more to care less about other events and then just focus on the ones that he really wants to win, that clearly didn't change much for him last year. He came into the Masters and massively outperformed the kind of bizarrely low expectations. And then won the US Open or the PGA later in the year. I can't remember which one it is off the top of my head, but it clearly doesn't impact the performance too much. People still tuned in to the Masters in record numbers. They tuned into the other majors in record numbers, partly because of the fact they knew that all of the big players were going to be there.
I mean, I'll counter one of your points by saying that there's not a player in recent memory who turns up for major tournaments as much as Brooks Koepka does. He always seems to be there or there about a really good each way bet for many years for Brooks Koepka at that major tournaments.
Yeah, the sort of top 10 Tony Finau of majors was Brooks. You could just bank on that. Unfortunately, the bookies have now cottoned on.
But the other thing I would say is that professional golf tends to be a bit overrepresented in the sports mix in the US in terms of its availability on network television. It's got quite a high profile week in, week out. So there are people, there is a place for it, there's a place to expand the audience. The other counterpoint I say to that is, look, you can make the same argument for tennis, right? You know, you've got those four Grand Slams. Tennis has struggled to do, not struggled, but in terms of creating a global circuit that appeals to wider sports fans to create those narratives. I think it's probably not been less successful than golf in terms of creating that hardcore audience. And, you know, they're looking at taking a greater interest in the running of that tour with the Masters event series because they recognize that ability of having that year-round narrative. So my view is the majors would benefit from a more settled tour, whether that is fewer events to create that interest more. And then, you know, you really promote the majors as where the big prizes are, where those narratives are settled.
I think it's also good that the LIV players are allowed to play in these, like that kind of confusion for a long time about that. I don't think that did anyone favours. Taking out the best players is never the answer to creating a more enticing product. So the LIV players that are able to qualify, and that will be another thing I think that comes with time, is that pressure of like, certainly some of the lower ranked ones will lose their automatic qualification. I mean, you don't, for like the Masters is the Masters, but like for, they'll have to go qualify for the US Open and the Open and stuff like that. If they've got to go do that, will it ultimately reduce the what could potentially be the higher quality players being at all of them being at the same event, because you'll have just the ones that are higher in the the official Golf World rankings, which isn't always reflective of where the whole of the game is at if you've got a divided tour setup.
What will be interesting, to further your point with the majors, is whether they do alter their entry requirements and what sort of tensions that could create with the established tours if the merger doesn't go through anytime soon. Look at Cam Smith. One of the reasons that he felt able to join LIV was because he won the Open and therefore got exemptions for, I can't remember off the top of my head, I think it's about 5 years or something like that. So his qualification status wasn't in jeopardy. And I do wonder if we're going to see some rule changes for the Ryder Cup when that comes around. There's talk of that. Even McIlroy seems open to that since John Rahm defected.
So. Yeah, it turns out if you lose your second best player or first best player, you might want to change how the qualification works. I mean, I imagine captain's picks would become quite valuable at that point. It would be a sort of Lord for diminishing returns the longer this drags out, you feel, when it comes to the majors. But for right now, I thought it does put them in a good moment. Right. I said we were going to focus on Augusta, and then we started just rambling about more general golf and stuff like that, which I'm, again, always here for. But as much as we talk about the traditions and the heritage and all of that stuff that goes with the Masters, no phones, no sponsors, logos, etc., they're not averse to change. They're not averse to doing new things. And you've been across some of those things and writing about them on for Sports Pro recently, Steve. Can you tell me what innovations are we seeing at Augusta this year?
Wimbledon is the other property that places so much pride in its traditions, and they're central to the Masters' appeal. The course is pristine. I mean, if you ever look at satellite images of Augusta, you realise that the rest of Augusta, Georgia, does not look like Augusta National. It's quite an achievement to make the course look as good as it does in that climate. That's part of the appeal. The traditions, the green jacket, the clubhouse, the championship, that's all part of its appeal, more so than any other tournament. I mean, the Open has history, for example, but it hasn't got the same cachet to it.
It's like if they played the Open at St. Andrews every year.
Pretty much, yeah. That's a good way of putting it. When it comes to St. Andrews, there is a lot of talk about it, but it goes around the country. It's just not quite as integral to the appeal of it. But the way it uses technology is designed to enhance those traditions. Now, that everything the Masters does is to maintain its position as the most prestigious prize in golf, and it sees tech as a way of doing that, by bringing fans closer, whether they're at home or abroad. I mean, look, I would love to go to the Masters. Whether I'm ever able to is another question.
If any major brand are looking for a couple of guests, you've got some willing podcasters right here. We'll come and chat all over Augusta National if you want us to.
Absolutely shameless, but also true. And the Masters has six commercial partners. And I can't remember them off the top of my head, but one of them is IBM. And they've been working with IBM for nearly 30 years. And they launched the first website, themasters.org, in 1996. And it's slowly built out to include everything you might expect: applications, data-driven analytics,
all the sexy stuff that people don't see.
All the sexy stuff that you can read about in Sports Pro quite regularly if you search for my name, which I do love.
You love searching for your own name? Wow, that is a huge admission there, Mr.
McCaskill. Wait until you see my bookmarks. For IBM, the Masters is a showcase, right? Funny enough, I imagine quite a lot of chief executives like golf. So probably quite a few are members of Augusta National, given the way it hands out its membership. So it's a high-profile showcase. And so this year, the big innovation, it's continuation innovation, is generative AI and how that can turn the treasure trove of data that IBM collects into actionable insights for broadcasters, for its digital platforms. So there are about 20,000 shots taken every single tournament. These are captured by cameras, captured by microphones, and captured by lasers.
By lasers?
That's for the geopositioning of the ball. The microphones are for the audio. Again, the cameras are for video, as you might expect. Now, based on all of this data, they can find some interesting things. So previously they've done player predictions or keys to the event. This year, they're doing real-time tracking across each hole. So you can get an insight. I mean, let's say third hole is more challenging compared to previous years. Maybe that's because of conditions or because of the pin position. If a player hits their drive onto the fairway and it's par four, for example, it could say 82% of players who hit the ball in this part of the fairway with their drive go on to birdie the hole. It's trying to bring people closer to the game, perhaps people who don't have that core golfing knowledge, or even people who do have that core golfing knowledge, just want to learn more about the course because they're so invested. You know, the Masters take place at the same course every single year. People know this course. People know the quirks of it. It'd be familiar to viewers. So there are people really interested in how this plays, especially since, you know, we talk about very few people will go to the Masters, even few will play it. You know, so there's a lot of interest in that. So that'll be across the website and via the app this year. So that'll be one thing to check out while you're watching. I don't know about you, but Masters Thursday is one of my favorite days of the year.
Oh, just, yeah. It is. Sorry, Nick, but I will not be working that hard.
it's just you go home and it's got you. You got 4 days of this, especially, you know, we're recording from London where it's obviously nighttime. It's just the best.
It's the best time. It's unbelievable. One of the other things I've always really liked about the Masters app, actually, because famously the Masters doesn't broadcast all of its rounds. It reserves the early rounds or the early part of the early rounds for the patrons on the ground. But you can still watch shot by shot everyone's round if you wanted to via the app, which for someone that's had experience with trying to live blog early rounds of the Masters, and this is a very, very niche problem. If you can't watch the golf, it's very hard to describe to people who are not watching the golf and following your text updates what's going on. But the Masters app does actually allow you to do that. So you can pick a player and then four and then watch all of their shots, which is a really phenomenal piece of tech. What's impressive about it is that they seem to add something every single year. Were there any other AI tools being folded into the Masters app this year?
Well, I think, you know, talking about things transcending their natural audience, I take it you've heard of generative AI this year.
Perhaps, yes.
So the Masters used generative AI last year to automate spoken word commentary for every single one of the 20,000 shots that were taken last year. The logic was simple. You simply cannot do that manually. You can't, you know, for years it's
the Masters. That's what we thought about Amazon Just Walk Out, Steve, but there's been some major revelations about that this week.
Indeed, but that's probably one area that we really shouldn't get distracted by. You've got 18 holes, you've got four rounds, you've got, you know, I know the Masters is a smaller field than most tournaments, but that's still about 100 players who are taking, you know, X amount of shots, and it's impossible to clip all that. Make them entertaining as well. And that's a lot of AI does. It feeds off crowd, it feeds off the data so that they can get these clips out there almost instantly to different platforms. So the Masters and IBM have done that before. That's part of their partnership. They added spoken word commentary last year. Something, again, talk about the similarity between Masters and Wimbledon. Wimbledon also work very closely with IBM and they've been doing that. And tennis is even, you know, there's even more going on in tennis in terms of shots and to our manual processes. This year, they are expanding that to the Spanish language. So do exactly the same. They use the same technology to add Spanish audio to every single one of the shots. Now, they're not just translating from the English, which, again, is probably something that AI could do quite easily. They've trained their natural language processing on the Spanish language and Spanish quirks, golf commentary, so it understands the game in Spanish, can talk about it in Spanish, and you're going to get, you know, in theory, more natural sounding audio on that. Obviously, that's really good for the Masters' global expansion. Well, not, you know, in terms of expansion, in terms of building its international audience. Spanish, obviously, major language in Latin America, Europe, and of course, the US. And that's one of the areas that many think that generative AI can have a role in sport in terms of making sport more accessible by creating that natural language, that audio. You know, just because people have to speak a certain language, why should they be excluded from accessing things in the same way? And there's obviously a lot of understandable questions about ethics in AI, whether that's in how times technology is used, whether it's going to take jobs of humans. But for something like this, which just wouldn't happen otherwise, I think it's a very interesting use of the technology.
No, absolutely. I mean, going back to the Spanish language interest in the Masters, the reigning champion is Spanish. So it makes a lot of sense. And when it comes to opening up media generally, it doesn't even have to be sports. It could be anything. There's probably so much, and it goes both ways. There's so much media out there that you cap your audience by the language that you put it out in. And if AI can help expand that audience, then that can only be a good thing for not only for users, but also for the people creating that content too.
I mean, it's an interesting segue into something else that's happening this year. So I'm a big video game fan and I often find myself automatically translating articles in Japan. There's a Japanese magazine called Famitsu and I translate the tweets on Twitter because it's just stuff that I would never know otherwise. And the other thing at the Masters this year is that there's a video game for the first time in 10 years. So EA Sports PGA Tour, you can go around and play. Again, he'll never play the Masters. He can play in a video game. The Augusta National has only ever appeared in about, I think, 3 or 4 video games. Obviously, it's, you know, in terms of its value as a fan engagement tool, that's massive, especially since EA is doing sort of live service things this year. You can play the Par 3 tournament this year, which again is a big part of the Masters build up on the, I think it's the Wednesday before the first round. So I have the game. I will be looking forward to playing it, perhaps while I'm watching for a little bit, maybe not on the Thursday because I'm usually just really engrossed in it, but at some point I think, oh yeah, I can take on that shot.
That sounds like a sports peer review waiting to happen. Okay, Steve, thank you so much for your time. Always a pleasure chatting to you. Happy Masters Week.
Happy Masters Week.